and welcome to another episode of Mormon History Podcast. This is your host, Skyler. How are you guys doing today? I just want to thank everybody who reached out to me via Facebook or email. It means a lot to hear about all the people who are listening to the program and those who enjoy what I do on a inconsistent but well-meaning basis to bring you guys more information about Mormon history and other things of that nature. Today's episode is brought to you by... I'm just kidding. Today's episode is something that I've been thinking about lately. Again, which I have thought about a lot before, and that is the Egyptian aspect, or rather the Reformed Egyptian aspect of the Book of Mormon, and why it's in there to begin with. Now, Fair Mormon, as well as other people, will speculate or try to lead you to believe that the reason why Lehi understands and speaks Egyptian, whether that's orally or only written, is because he was a well-known trader and he had to trade with the Egyptians, therefore he needed to know the language. I, on the other hand, try not to put things into the Book of Mormon that are not there, meaning nowhere in the Book of Mormon does it talk about Lehi being a trader with the Egyptians. It just talks about in a very forthright manner in why he would know the Egyptian language. And we will get to that by reading some of the passages in the Book of Mormon right now. So 1 Nephi chapter 1, Ermerger, First Nerfer. Let's try that one more time. So in 1 Nephi chapter 1, verse 2, it says, "Yea, I make a record in the language of my father, which consists of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians." Now, right there, it doesn't particularly tell us why it consists of the language of the Jews and also of the Egyptians, other than we know that they are living in Jerusalem. So Lehi's family would be Jewish, so they would have a Hebrew, they would know Hebrew, but it doesn't say at that moment why there is a language of the Egyptians. But when we get to 1 Nephi 5 verse 14, it says, "And it came to pass that my father Lehi also found upon the plates of brass a genealogy of his fathers, wherefore he knew that he was a descendant of Joseph. Yea, even that Joseph who was the son of Jacob, who was sold into Egypt, and who was preserved by the hand of the Lord, that he might preserve his father Jacob and all his household from perishing with famine." So what we gather from that is that through the brass plates, we understand that Lehi is a descendant of Joseph who was sold into Egypt, and that because of the descendancy, if that's even a word, the Egyptian that Lehi would know is because he's a descendant of Joseph from Egypt. So now we start getting third-party people claiming descendancy of Lehi throughout the Book of Mormon. So 2 Nephi chapter 3 verse 4 says, "For behold, thou art the fruit of my loins, and I am a descendant of Joseph, who was carried captive into Egypt, and great were the covenants of the Lord which he made unto Joseph." Then we get to Mosiah chapter 1 verse 4, "For it were not possible that our father Lehi could have remembered all these things to have taught them to his children, except it were for the help of these plates, for he having been taught in the language of the Egyptians, therefore he could read these engravings and teach them to his children, that thereby they could teach them to their children, and so fulfilling the commandments of God, even down to this present time." Mosiah 12, verse 34 says, I am the Lord thy God who hath brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now we're going to get a little bit of new information from Alma chapter 10, verse 3, which says, And Aminadi was a descendant of Nephi, who was the son of Lehi, who came out of the land of Jerusalem, who was a descendant of Manasseh, who was the son of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt by the hand of his brethren. So, what we learn from that verse is that, specifically, he's of the descendant of Manasseh. Moving on to Alma 29, verse 12, we have, Yea, I have always remembered the captivity of my fathers, and that same God who delivered them out of the hands of Egyptians did deliver them out of bondage. And finally, in Mormon 9, verse 32, it says, And now behold, we have written this record according to our knowledge in the characters which are called among us the Reformed Egyptian, being handed down and altered by us according to our manner of speech. Now, the other thing we get from Mormon 9 in the next verse is, And if our plates had been sufficiently large, we should have written in Hebrew. But the Hebrew hath been altered by us also. And if we could have written in Hebrew, behold, you would have had no imperfection in our record. So those two last verses kind of give us some interesting information. One saying, this is a Reformed Egyptian because it's been altered by us. And secondly, it would have been a more perfect record if we could have just written it in Hebrew, but even then it really wouldn't have mattered because we altered that as well. But here's the thing. So Manasseh was born in Egypt in the 18th century BC. So 1722. Around that time frame. So you're saying that over 1,000 years later, Lehi understands and speaks and is able to write the language of Egyptian because he's a descendant of Manasseh. Not only that, but the language has actually changed multiple times, both written and spoken, in that 1,100 years. There are many examples if you look at the Egyptian language and how it has changed over time. There's a lot of examples of how it went from a hieroglyphic to a hieratic to a demotic language. And, for instance, you have a picture of a vase, or vase, depending on where you're from in the world. And throughout the hieroglyphic stages, it gets a little more basic. And then the hieratic stage, it looks nothing like a vase. And then the demotic phase, you basically are looking at some form of Greek-looking written language. And really, the demotic language wasn't even popularized until after Lehi had left Jerusalem. He would have been still part of the hieratic language changes, which still doesn't look like any kind of hieroglyphic language. It's still a very Greek, Hebrew looking penmanship, if you will. Now, I'm sure that there's Egyptian scholars and language masters and whoever that would probably slap me for even saying such a thing, but I'm looking at it as a logical standpoint, as a, average person, just looking at the changes, and that's what I see. But if you look at, just generally speaking, the Hebrew language in and of itself is, to me, looks like a very difficult language to both speak and write. Hebrew is very similar to Arabic or Aramaic, Chaldean. It's a Semitic language. And so the fact that not only does Lehi and his descendants have to keep up with Hebrew, they also now have to keep up with Egyptian. That doesn't make any sense to me, especially with the fact that the Egyptian written versus the Egyptian spoken is different. So you have to teach them how to write it and how to speak it, at the same time how to write Hebrew and also speak Hebrew. And that the only reason why you know such a language is because you are a descendant of Manasseh, who is the son of Joseph, who was a slave in Egypt. But it's not like they stayed in Egypt. They left. So you are teaching your ancestors a slave language and keeping it in the family for 1,000 years only for the fact that your ancestor was a slave? That doesn't make much sense to me. I wouldn't, if I was a prisoner of war, I'm not in the military and I'm not making light of prisoners of war. But imagine being in the military and being a prisoner of war and being held captive for, I don't know, 5 years. And while you're captive, you learn some of the language of your captors. And then when you're released, you decide to teach your ancestors and your children this slave, captor, prisoner of war language for no reason really other than what? I don't know. That's what this episode's about. That's what the question is. That's the question I have, is why did Lehi speak, write, etc., Egyptian language, and continue to teach it to the ancestors and have them continue to teach it for the only reason of being an 1,100-year descendant of somebody? I have ancestors not even 200 years ago, not even 150 years ago, from different countries, and I don't speak that language. I have no reason to speak that language. I live in the United States of America. The language is English. So they don't live in Egypt. They live in Jerusalem. They speak Hebrew or write Hebrew. And so they may speak Aramaic or something else, but they have no reason to speak it. And then they leave Jerusalem altogether. You have however many adults there were. And now all of a sudden, for what, almost another 1,000 years, you're going to pass down this language through different tribes of Nephites and Lamanites and whateverites there are, to have some kind of language that somewhat resembles each other. I mean, the only reason why we have some type of normal language in America is because we're forced to accept specific words as words. And those change. I mean, 100 years ago, it was not a big thing at all to say he molested me. It just means bother. But now we try to steer clear of someone saying he molested me because it means that he diddled you. So things change subtly, but we have a standard language. We have a standard acceptance of language. So from a logical standpoint, it's hard for me, who is not that smart, to understand why the Book of Mormon was translated from plates that were written in some Reformed Egyptian, because these people decided that they wanted to speak and write this language that they had no use for outside of conversing with themselves, only for the mere fact that from 1100 to 2000 years ago, they were descendants of Manasseh, who was the son of Joseph, who was enslaved and sold into Egypt. Now, this particular podcast episode leads me into another thought, which I'm not going to get totally into right now, but it's this idea that I have anyways of what I refer to as the degradation of language. Meaning, however many adults started the journey out to wherever they landed from Jerusalem, they left with only that amount of words in their vocabulary between all of the adults. Now, if you throw in the brass plates and what they contained, hypothetically, there would be a greater vocabulary, although they would also have to understand what that word means. So, for instance, if I threw out the word indolent, there's some of you who may understand what that word means, but there's some of you that would not know what indolent or indolence is. And so you would either have to make it up or just forget about it. Forget about it. But you wouldn't necessarily use it unless you knew what it actually meant. So now if somebody knows that the word indolent means the inability to exert oneself or lazy, then you could teach your children, hey, if somebody is not doing a whole lot and not really putting in any work, then they're being indolent. And then that would continue on, and then another word might come up as lazy, and instead of indolent, you would just use lazy, or you would use both. But other than making up your own language or making up your own words, you would have a degradation of language. So my theory anyways is that as we move along down the chain of descendants from Lehi, you would actually see either language dissolve or it would be made up primarily of stuff that they made up themselves. You wouldn't have third-party words all of a sudden be known and understand what that is. Now, where that comes into play is when you have, for instance, in 3 Nephi, when Jesus shows up and all of a sudden they are being told word for word the same thing that Matthew was teaching, then my theory is that they would have no idea what the heck is even being told to them anyways. They wouldn't know what half of those words even meant. Now anyways, that's just a musing, mumbling nonsense of a crazy person like myself. And maybe there's zero value or even interest in such a thing. But I still think it would be interesting to see if such a degradation would occur in that kind of situation, where something like, for instance, you drop six adults off on a desert island and leave them there for 1,000 years, what would the language look like 1,000 years later without any extra contact outside other than one visitor that came to speak to them? I imagine that's how most languages come about anyways, but it usually takes more than 1,000 years. And so it'd be interesting to see what kind of study we could do or see what kind of information they would understand, or if their language would improve from First Nephi to the end of the Book of Mormon, or if we would see it being at its peak in the beginning of the Book of Mormon and then degrade into a simplified language near the end. So anyways, those are my thoughts on both the Egyptian aspect of the Book of Mormon without theorizing or just giving Lehi some job that isn't stated in the Book of Mormon itself, and also some thoughts on maybe language in and of itself and how it might degrade over time in the Book of Mormon. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Mormon History Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I hope that you'll tune in next time. And like always, have a good one.